Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome back, my friends, to another edition of Web Sleuth Radio. This is True Crime Without the Greasy Taste, whatever that means. Now, in the This Is No Surprise department, the jury in the Dylann Roof case gave him the death penalty for gunning down 9 churchgoers during a Bible study in Charleston, South Carolina. When Dylann Roof went into that Bible study, they welcomed him with open arms and with their love. In fact, I believe he even mentioned that some of them were so nice he almost didn't kill them. What a jerk. Anyway, we know Dylann's name. I'm going to read off the victims of his violence right now because I think we need to think of those people rather than Dylann at this time. Reverend Clementa Pinckney, Cynthia Hurd, Taronda Coleman Singleton, Tawanza Sanders, Myra Thompson, Ethel Lee Lance, Susie Jackson, Daniel L. Simmons, and DePayne Middleton, doctor. She was 49 years old. And those are the 9, I said 14, I believe it was 9 churchgoers that he gunned down. Those are the people that we need to remember. Sentencing will be coming up. And also, we're going to talk about later on about the Asian male on the Long Island serial killer case. But first, Sierra Lamar. She was last seen on her way to catch the school bus on March 16th, which is just walking down the driveway. I believe her school bus was very close to her house, and she was never seen again. Antolin Garcia Torres is the man on trial for Sierra's kidnapping and murder. And since this unfortunately brought back horrific memories, Mark Klass is involved and knows Sierra's family, and he joins us tonight. Mark Klass from the Klass Kids Foundation. Mark, Happy New Year. Oh, I need to hold on, Mark. This is my fault. Just a minute. Just a minute. There you go. I guess I should learn how to operate this. Happy New Year, Mark. Happy New Year. How are you?
Thank you, Tricia. Happy New Year to you, too. I hope that you had a wonderful holiday season.
I did, and same to you, Mark. And unfortunately, after the holidays, we have to come back and deal with reality, and that is the Sierra Lamar case. Now, this is an interesting case because she's been missing since March 2012. And, Mark, she has yet to be found, but they say this is a murder case. And let's see, let me get my notes here. This dirtbag, Antolin Torres, is the Antolin Garcia Torres is a man on trial for Sierra's kidnapping and murder. Mark, why is it that they can charge her or charge him with her murder when there has been no sign of her, basically?
Well, they believe that she's dead for a variety of reasons, not least of which is the fact that she was a social media animal. I mean, she just, and I don't mean that in a bad way. I mean, she just really, really liked social media and had multiple accounts, and they ceased immediately. And both her family and the authorities believe it would be very difficult for Sierra to almost survive in a world without being able to without being able to use her computer and communicate with her friends. That's one small reason, but there are certain things in this case. They found her DNA in his car, and they found his DNA on her clothing. And I believe they've got some fiber samples and some other evidence as well. Yet he claims he never met her. And he fits all of the descriptions that people had given and has a history of committing that kind of crime and just happened to be there when Sierra was kidnapped, walking to the school bus on a rainy Friday morning in Morgan Hill.
And so this is basically an opportunity for him because he had been, I'm not sure if he was caught, but he had tried to kidnap somebody out of one of the supermarket areas, right? One of the parking lots.
Well, I said that there was a history. And yeah, that's what the history is. He apparently, oh, man, I'm sorry, but I believe he used a stun gun. to disabled women in the parking lot of the Safeway supermarket that he actually worked at, and that this occurred to more than one woman, and that these are charges that have been brought against him as well. So they'll be able to demonstrate that, you know, he's done, that he's a, well, that he hates women, number one.
Mm-hmm.
Number two, that he's got no regard at all for women in any way, shape, or form, and I guess believes that women exist to amuse him. I really don't know what it is, but he's done it before, and he when he finally did it to Sierra, I think he just took it over. He obviously took it over the top because she's no longer.
Right, and Antolin Garcia Torres was a master at getting postponements. How long has he been arrested? For something like 3 years, maybe more? I don't know. And it was just
I believe it was postponement.
No,
it's been almost 5 years. He was arrested on May 22nd of 2012, the year that she was kidnapped. So they had him pretty quickly. Yeah, they've had him in custody for a long, long time, almost 5 years now. It's unbelievable.
And that is just ridiculous that it's taken this long. They're picking the jury. I'm not sure if the jury has been all of the jurors have been chosen or not. But opening arguments do start on January 18th. And, Mark, will you be there?
I don't believe that the entire jury has been picked yet. I believe that will happen shortly before they do opening statements on the 18th. And, I plan to be there. I'm going to go there with Marlene to offer her some support. Marlene Lamar, Sierra's mom, to offer her some support.
Sierra's mom. Something very incredible happened that came out of this tragedy, and that was a uniting of a community like I've never seen before. There was the Sierra Lamar Search Center, which was an old grade school. And, I don't know how long they kept searching for Sierra, but it really brought this community together. Right, Mark?
Well, I've actually seen something similar to that. I mean, that's exactly what Petaluma did when Polly was kidnapped back in 1993. And, in fact, that became a big part of the story, just, you know, this massive community response. But the community of Morgan Hill is absolutely unbelievable. There are still a cadre of searchers that regularly go out to find Sierra's remains, and they've been doing this upward of 5 years now. I mean, these are just some unbelievable, dedicated people that have really created their own kind of community. It's really a very cool thing. But, it's a great community, and the response has been great, and there are these ongoing searches, and hopefully someday maybe they'll recover her remains.
I hope so. I feel confident that they will. And that's the thing about cases like this that are so tragic. When they continue on for so long, unfortunately, people lose interest. They can't keep, you know, giving up their spare time and searching. But in this case, they have built their own community. I mean, they have maps, they have grids. It's just amazing what they do. And for years, they had massive food when you went there to search. You know, there were these wonderful ladies that cooked, all coming together for and her family. I'm sure that helped her family through what, unfortunately, you know, Mark, as to be just the most horrific time of their lives. How are they doing? You know them. I'm sure you've spoken to them. How are they?
Yeah, actually, you were talking about the kitchen ladies who are part of that community. They're a locally famous group of five or six women that have probably served upwards of 40 or 50,000 meals at this point to people helping to look for Sierra. I actually was with the family, with Marlene and Steve and the kitchen ladies, and that whole group had a big party right at Thanksgiving. And I can tell you that it means the world to Steve and Marlene Lamar that there are people that continue to support them in every way you could imagine, you know, all these 5 years later. you know, when you're in their situation, you are in a situation where you're going to have to relive the last few seconds of your daughter's life over the course of, you know, weeks and weeks and weeks, it creates a real fragility. It makes them
Absolutely.
Very fragile, you know, and it becomes overwhelming. So, yeah, these folks, man, they're fantastic. And I know that a lot of them plan on attending as much of the trial as they possibly can. There are people that are dedicated really a good part of their lives to both recovering this young child and also trying to ensure that this guy gets what he deserves for this crime, which is a death penalty. I mean, that's
Absolutely.
What we want to see. You know, this punk
no
he
question.
Took this young girl. He took this young girl out of nowhere and just randomly, and he did something like that. There's just a special place in hell for people that do these kinds of things, I can assure you.
Absolutely. There's no question about that. Absolutely. I did have somebody text me about the searchers, and it wasn't just Morgan Hill. We say Morgan Hill because that's where Sierra was from, but it was surrounding areas
yeah.
from all over. In fact, I know people that flew in from other states
yeah.
to help. So, yeah, when we say Morgan Hill, we mean everybody. It's the Morgan Hill community.
Well,
go ahead.
Actually, the guy that is sort of the de facto head of the search now, Roger Nelson, comes from Gilroy. So there you go.
Gilroy, the garlic capital of the world, I believe. So
yep.
I'll never forget. I used to live there, and I'd smell garlic. It was wonderful every day.
Yeah,
okay,
yeah.
Enough of memory lane. Mark, we have somebody on the phone. His name is Mike, and he wants to ask you about Antolin Garcia's wife, Antolin Garcia Torres's wife, and her name is Francine. And Mike, are you there?
Yes, I am.
Okay, you
hey,
have
Mike.
Mark Glass on the line.
Hi, Mark. My question is, with the clothes being folded in the bag, do you believe personally Francine either conspired or even associated or abetting in this case at all?
So basically you're saying that you think it would be out of character for him to carefully fold and put her stuff in the backpack, correct?
Yes, I basically am
yeah.
saying is I believe
yeah.
that he didn't do he did the murder himself, but I believe that he had someone help him dispose the body, and also with the clothes, I can't see him really taking his time, folding the clothes, putting it in, and decide I'm going to put the bag right where the cactus area is.
Yeah, no. I get what you're saying and agree with you, but I don't know what to make of something like that at all. I really
mm-hmm.
don't. I'm sure that the police and the DA's investigators have considered all of that very carefully and will probably have some revelations to make as the trial begins.
Or the other question is,
go ahead.
The other question is, do you think Francine knows where Sierra's body is?
Oh, I don't have any idea. You know what? It seems to me the only person in the world that really knows where her body is isn't talking. And if he would just open his mouth, we could be done with this whole thing sooner rather than later. I don't know anything about his wife at all, and would hope that she's not complicit. And if she is in some way, then I guess God's going to have to be her judge because nobody else is looking at her.
Okay, thank you.
Sure.
Thank you, Mike. We appreciate you calling. Take care now. Bye-bye. That's interesting because you have to wonder, Mark, his wife, first of all, I always wonder about women who marry people like this monster, where, you know, what were they thinking? And you have to wonder, does she know anything? I have no idea. That's the first time I've ever even had that thought, that she might know something. But, you know, if a woman is with somebody who's abusing them, they're, you know, beaten into submission, but that's no excuse. If she knows something, she should say it, right?
You know, I think we're dealing with really highly dysfunctional people here. Garcia's father, if I'm not mistaken, is serving a multi-year sentence for sexually abusing his own daughter.
Oh, lovely.
I mean, yeah, these are just nasty people, you know. So I don't know. I don't know what anybody knows except for the fact that Garcia Torres knows where Sierra is, and he's not telling anybody.
It's, yeah, and that's ridiculous that he's been able to go on this long and just make a mockery of the system with his constant delays. Another question from our audience. Do you happen to know who's going to be on the witness list, other than the obvious people, the investigators, perhaps her family? Do you know of anybody else?
Oh, I'm not on the witness list because nobody subpoenaed me for anything. Well, beyond that, I have absolutely no idea. I mean, they would call, you know, people that were involved in the case. They would call their forensic people. They would call their investigators. They would probably call the first responders at the scene. They may even, you know, have a need to talk to some of the search people. I really don't know about any of that.
I am sure of
Tricia is that I think that they're very well prepared for this case because they've had so long to prepare for it, and they seem confident.
And they're ready. You're absolutely right. And I'd love it if you were subpoenaed for some reason because, you would get the point across very clearly on the stand. I think that would be wonderful. But like you said, it's, you know, you're not involved in the case. You've been a big part of helping find Sierra, but there, you know, who knows? You might be subpoenaed. You never know.
Tricia, the problem with being subpoenaed as a witness in a capital murder case, and perhaps any criminal case, I'm not sure about that, is the fact that you're not allowed into the courtroom until after you've completed your testimony, because they want to ensure, and this is one of the great ironies, they want to ensure that witness, prosecution, or any witness testimony is not tainted by the testimony that came before them. Of course, that applies to everybody except the killer, who can sit in court the entire time, obviously, and
right,
listen to everybody's testimony and then create his own justifications as he's going along, you know, so that when he does his testimony, there's maybe some seamlessness to it or not. I don't know, but hey, that's the way it is, right?
Exactly. But the problem with that is the defense could put the family on their witness list, and they have to sit out until
they're deemed to be called in.
You can't?
No, they don't do that. Not in California any longer. No, I believe not. No, I
was
believe
that because
family
of
members.
Lacey Peterson?
Oh, I don't know why. I don't know which case it would have been. I know that historically, I mean, there are some cases like the Salerno case of Katina Salerno's murder in 1978. They did that to the family. They made the mom and dad sit outside while they had the 12-year-old daughter, my good friend Nina, testify as a character witness about her own sister. And her parents weren't allowed in the courtroom, so they were sitting in chairs outside the courtroom, but they could hear everything. And the defense lawyer started badgering Nina, who was, 12 years old at the time, and at one point he picked up her sister's bloody shirt and held it in front of the little girl. And she completely freaked out. She went out screaming from the courtroom into her parents' arms. Now,
how could they do that?
Well, defense attorneys, you know, they just do what they do.
you're right. That's the best way to put it.
They do. And her parents started Crime Victims United as a result of that ordeal, that and the murder, and have worked tirelessly for the 30-odd years in between to ensure that victim families can be well represented in the courtroom through all phases of the proceedings.
You say Nina is your good friend. How's she doing?
Oh, yeah. Great.
She's doing well?
Yeah, Nina's great.
Good.
Oh, no. There's always, like, the rest of the story, right? Okay, so
right.
So anyway, Nina grew up and decided that she wanted to be a lawyer. And
wow,
she's
good
a,
for her.
She's a brilliant lady. So what she did is she attended a very defense friendly law school, so she could learn all of the tricks of the trade. And she then became a prosecutor upon graduation from law school, and had a perfect record of prosecutions up in Sacramento County for the decade that she worked as a prosecutor up there. And she's now running her own firm out of Placer County, and she recently took over as the president of Crime Victims United because her mother, my other really dear friend, Harriet, has decided to retire at 87 years old or whatever in the world Harriet is. It's a great story about a great family that suffered a horrible tragedy.
And what a great ending. They rose above it, and they've done incredible things to change it for the better. And Nina sounds like truly an amazing person. That's fantastic. Mark, before we leave off on Sierra here, the opening statements are going to be January 18th. You say you're confident that the prosecution knows its case, but don't you think, isn't there that little bit of a bug in your ear that says there is no body, and that's what they're going to hang on to, and they just need one juror to hang that jury? That's my concern. I'm sure it's a concern of everybody's, but do you think it's rational? Do you think it's something we should worry about? Nothing we can do about it, but...
Yeah, sure, it's rational. Anything... is possible. I know I've spoken with the prosecutor, and I've you know, seen this case develop from the very, very beginning in a kind of a personal way. And I just have confidence that the investigation and the case preparation were all put in the hands of very good people that have taken it to this point and will continue to take it through to what I hope is a successful prosecution that results in the death sentence for this punk that murdered Sierra Lamar.
Absolutely. Well, we'll definitely keep in touch with you, Mark, as you continue to follow this case. Let's hope it's a quick trial and the jury does the right thing for Sierra Lamar and her family. Mark, let's move on to Class Kid.
I don't believe that it will necessarily be a quick trial. What I can tell you, what I do know, is that there have been three defense attorney specialists assigned to defend Torres. And that, you know, these are the characters that have designed 5 years worth of delays. So, you know, I think any expectation that this is going to be a quick trial is probably going to be met with defeat, you know?
Yeah, naive, yeah. Well, you're
yeah,
right. You're
naive.
Absolutely right. So we can only hope for the best. You know, here's the thing. The truth, that's all we want, the truth. We don't want any games or sidestepping or tap dancing. Just give us the truth. So, but that just seems a little bit too difficult these days.
Well, it is. I mean, he knows the truth, and he's not telling anybody. Torres knows
know.
The truth. You know,
someday,
and all of this
yeah,
is happening
someday.
Because he refuses
because of,
to tell the truth.
Someday we're going to have something that can force someone to tell the truth. I'm firmly convinced of that. I hope I'm alive when it happens. Okay, let's talk about ClassKids.org, that organization. And the other day, I was trying to explain to somebody about human trafficking, because when you hear the word human trafficking, a lot of people think, okay, well, that's overseas, that's, you know, in Asia, has nothing to do with Americans. There's no human trafficking here. That's somewhere else. Human trafficking is when a young girl, 12 years old, 13, 15, 17, runs away, and then they are caught in the claws of a pimp, and they are forced to become a sex worker. That is human trafficking, when somebody is forcing them to do something they don't want to do. And Mark, how big of a problem is that right here in the U.S.?
Well, first of all, we have to define it as a person 16 years or under. That's
okay,
how we would, you know, that's how we would define it. And since in the United States, in federal law, it's a 16-year-old can't consent to sex, therefore mm-hmm. means that every sexual encounter, particularly if we're dealing with adults, could be considered, well, are a crime. That it's forcing a child to do something. We're supposed to be protecting our kids. We're not supposed to be forcing them to pull tricks. You know what I'm saying,
mm-hmm.
Tricia? So
absolutely.
We've realized only in this century, actually. It was in 2000 that President Bush signed the first TVPA, Trafficking Victims Protection Act. And the monies that were generated through that act were almost exclusively sent to foreign countries because, as you said, we weren't considered a supply country. We weren't supplying the demand. We were just a demand country for human trafficking. So we sent all of this money until we realized probably 10 years down the line that we are, in fact, creating a lot of our own demand, and it's in prostitution. It's in child prostitution, which is advertised in places, well, Craigslist used to do it. I understand they're not doing it anymore. But Backpage is the one that I think everybody's aware of.
They Backpage just said today that they were stopping, just today.
Well, you know, that's great, but somebody
if
else
it's
will
true.
Do it then.
Right.
I think,
and,
I think
it's
almost
it's
better. Yeah, I think, of course it's true. I mean, even, if they're doing a terrible thing, maybe sometimes it's okay to leave well enough alone. I mean, they were able to mm-hmm. mine Backpage for a lot of data, and somebody else is going to be doing it now, and it's a matter of finding out who that person is, who that entity is, you know. So, I don't know. I mean, that's what Backpage is all about. I don't know how they're going to be able to survive.
Exactly. That's why I say I when I read the article today that they've agreed not to deal with sexual workers anymore at all. I find that hard to believe, but we'll see what happens. But you're right, Mark. Somebody else will just come along and pick up the slack because there is so much money in this that it's unbelievable. Now, class kids, and I don't know how much you want to talk about this, but I know Brad Dennis, your dear friend, and you work side by side with him. He also does a lot with the human trafficking. What does Class Kids, what do you do as an organization to help put a stop to this?
Well, we started looking into human sex trafficking in about 2007. And in fact, Brad and I and some others held a 3-day workshop on the issue here in Northern California. And we decided we would, try to raise awareness about the issue, first of all. And Brad was very, very successful at doing that by creating the whole Super Bowl anti-trafficking campaign back in 2009.
That's right. Tell us about that.
Well, I mean, it was he was working with the oh my goodness gracious, the Southeast Coalition. Oh my goodness, I forget Anna's the name of Anna's company.
Working with law enforcement.
With law enforcement, but working with another nonprofit too specifically to create the program to try to identify child victims. Here's the premise. The premise is that if you provide an opportunity for huge amounts of men with a lot of free time and a lot of free money to come together for an event, that crime is going to follow that, right? That everybody's
mm-hmm.
going to be
right.
trying to get their little bit here and there. And it's the same for prostitution. It tends to rise dramatically about tenfold in any given Super Bowl host city. in the week leading up to the Super Bowl, and in fact, up into the days leading up to the Super Bowl. So somebody has to mine that information and provide it so that law enforcement can make rational decisions based on information that is given to them. The problem is that law enforcement doesn't necessarily have the resources to do this data mining. And so over the course of the last, 8 years now, Brad is sort of turned the class kids human trafficking effort away from trying to make the whole Super Bowl anti-trafficking thing bigger to trying to mine for data and see if we can find girls that are being trafficked in the host city. One of the ways they did this last year was to go to hotels all over the Bay Area and put together a hotel photo database to see if they could match anything in the photos being advertised on Backpage with anything that might be in the database. And they proved to be successful with that. And last year in 2015, they helped to they provided information that led to the rescue of 19 girls and women that were being illegally trafficked. And in 2016, that occurred with 11 victims of human trafficking. So as a result of the work that primarily Brad and his team have been doing in the human trafficking arena, just this last June, the Class Kids Foundation was awarded the FBI Director's Community Leadership Award.
Oh, that's great.
Which is really a big deal. Isn't that a cool thing?
Yeah,
that's kind of a big deal.
That's very cool. I think it's a great deal. No surprise that your organization received it. And I know Brad Dennis does so much work, and you would never know that he goes out and rescues these young children, because he would never brag about it. He would never say, hey, here's what I did. You would never know that this guy, and you too, Mark. I mean, it's both of you are so humble and do so many good things that just thank God you're here and helping everybody to hopefully live in a safer universe. Okay, Mark.
Richard, do you remember the trip that you and Brad and I took to Omaha, Nebraska?
Oh, I'll never forget that. Yes.
For the Amber Harris case.
Amber Harris.
That's where you can see class kids really in action. You know, doing footwork on these cases. I mean, that's a really big deal, man.
It is, and you know, let me from personal experience, let me tell you that Mark and Brad and the other volunteers will go into a town if they're invited, and help search for a missing child. And it's not just jump in and search. It's all encompassing. They surround the family. They help the family. They organize the search. They get the food for everybody. They help the family in so many other ways. It truly is an amazing event to watch, just how they put together this loving, caring, hardworking, brilliant team of people to try and locate a missing child. And Mark, I got to commend you on that. What you and Brad and the rest of the team, what you guys do is just truly amazing. But here's the point I wanted to make, Mark. All of this costs money. You don't get free airline. You don't get free hotel. I mean, occasionally maybe you'll get a little discount or whatever. But you survive purely on public donations. And I don't know if people realize that. And that's really difficult, isn't it?
It is, yeah, Tricia. We don't take any government money, that's for sure. We decided not to go that route a long, long time ago, because mostly all of that money goes to the National Center for Missing and Exploited Kids anyway. And so you can't compete with a behemoth like that. What you can do is you can find innovative ways to assist in the missing child and the child safety arena, and that's what I think Class Kids has been consistently good at over the course of our 23-year history now. And you're right, we could use I'd love to get some donations. We'd love to get some, you know, good substantial donations. It would be, it would something that I can't even imagine. But you know, we do manage to go. But let me tell you, can I tell you about something that we're doing, and maybe your listeners could even help us with? Well, we've had a thing over the course of the last few years called the Class Family Housing Fund. And we have a wonderful benefactor for that fund. And what we do is we want to help families of missing kids through their very difficult time by offering some kind of housing assistance. And that could come in almost any form. It could be paying rent for a period of time or paying off a mortgage for a period of time. But we haven't heard of a lot of cases lately, and nobody's really been reaching out to us to help in to secure any of those funds. So I think if your listening audience knows anybody that is in a real financial situation and could use some assistance as they're looking for their missing child, you know, they should contact us via our website or on Facebook, either way, and we'll take a look at we'll take a look at the case and take a look at the situation. What we're thinking of doing right now with some of the money, and we have a pretty fair amount of money in there, is to provide transitional housing for underage human trafficking victims, because we know there's a lot of permanent beds out there. There's not a lot of transitional stuff out there, so we thought that we might be able to help in that way.
That would be great. And yes, you did have a benefactor happy with that, but you do have to specifically use it for housing. And so we have a lot of people on Web Sleuths who are looking for their children who might very well benefit from this. So please contact, go to classkids.org. You can go to Class Kids on Facebook. You can contact me through Web Sleuths. You know, get in touch with somebody and let Mark and his team look at it and see if they could help you out, because that is, I've never heard of anybody doing that. Nobody would think about that. Who would think about, maybe they can't pay their rent because they're busy searching for their child. Nobody would think about it. That's why it's so brilliant.
Yeah, we've always been really innovative, I think.
Mm-hmm.
You know,
we
do things that nobody else has done or is doing, and we do it on a shoestring budget.
You do. Well, let's hopefully we'll put a link up to your website and invite people to donate. Maybe we can get you a little bit of cash flow going here at the first of the year. Okay.
That would be good. Everybody gets a letter to show to the IRS for their deduction too.
Wonderful. Yeah, it's a 501(c)(3) charity. It's all there for the deducting to be done. Mark Class, classkids.org. I love you. Give my best to Violet. Say hello to Brad. And Web Sleuth, we're your army. We're just waiting here. You tell us what to do, Mark, and we'll do it.
Thank you so much, Tricia. You know, it's always a pleasure. I love you dearly.
Thank you. We'll talk to you again soon. Oh, I love you too. Okay. We'll see you, Mark.
Bye-bye.
Bye-bye. I do love that man. And his wife. His wife is wonderful. Oh, my God. I want to marry her. No, I'm not gay. I just want to have a wife like her, like Violet. She's amazing, organized, funny, can cook, smart, does everything. She's unbelievable. I think she's an android. She can't be human because she's too perfect. Okay, we want to talk about something here on Sleuths. We've been really going deep into the Long Island serial killer cases as well as other cases. That is all connected to the Killing Season, which was on in November and December on A&E, a fantastic show, got good ratings, had a lot of positive effect, and we've had a lot of new people come to Sleuths because of the Killing Season. There's still some unidentified bodies that are out there. Somebody loves them. Somebody's wondering what happened to them. One of the unidentified bodies connected to the Long Island serial killer is what we call Asian male. And Asian male was found on, let's see, let me get my stuff here. Yes, he was found on Gilgo Beach. The police say he was wearing women's clothing, but they won't be specific. So who knows? It was a skeletonized situation, so he had to have been there for a good 5 years or more. He was discovered on Gilgo Beach, May 2011. And now there's somebody that has come up. His name is Andy Sue, and that's spelled T-S-O-U. He is a college student who went missing around the same time. Actually, he went missing in 2005, excuse me. Andy Sue went missing in 2005. They are working, people are working now to see if maybe Andy Sue is the Asian male. And I would encourage our Web Sleuths members, because we have so many great people working to identify the unidentified. It's just, it amazes me. Every time I go and look at the forum, I can't believe it. These people are so smart and so dedicated. Anyway, we do want to focus on Asian male to see if we can find out who this person is and might lead to the Long Island serial killer. At the very least, it will give some loving family the knowledge that they've been waiting for about their son. So you can go onto Web Sleuths. You can go to the List Forum, to the Unidentified Forum, all kinds of places you can find this information. And, of course, if you're having trouble locating something that you want to talk about, like Asian male, just click on the Contact Us button, and then we get an email, and we'll be glad to help you out best we can. Okay, my darling True Crime Angels, that wraps it up for tonight. We'll be back next week on Blog Talk. I am not going to be doing Trisha's True Crime video anymore through iHeart. I may go back to iHeart at some point. But right now, I'm going to do it on Blog Talk because I get to do it and I want. I get to say what I want, and I get to, pick my hours, pick my time. It's just much more flexible. And, of course, this episode will be available for just a few minutes after we end it, okay? Okay, now, remember, I don't want you to be one of my topics next week. So stay out of trouble. Just go to websleuths.com. Stay there, and you'll be safe. Take care, everybody. Trisha Griffith saying so long and good night.